We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
Well, we are going to call this segment a segment with Soap and Deb of the New York Times, and we hope both of us to give you all the words fit to hear. Soap and, first of all, thanks for on this Monday evening for giving us a couple of moments of your time for sure.
Thank you so much for having me, Steve. And I feel like I should mention that you and I actually go back quite a ways, even if you don't realize it, because back, I think it was about 12 years ago, I was an intern for WFAN when you guys were in Astoria, and one of my jobs was to screen calls for you.
Yes.
So you and I met way back when. There's no way you'd remember this, and that's totally fine. But I just want you to know, we go back a little ways. So we've worked together a little bit in the past.
Well, I know there's been so many people that have come through WFAN. I would think, no, I don't recall, because if I saw your face, I think I might recall that we worked together, and I certainly hope you had as good a time working with me as I did with you, because I have been known to let others know that I've worked with what it is that we like to see happen, and so forth and so on. So, first of all, it's a pleasure to have you on, and obviously, you've done very well for yourself with working for the New York Times and covering the NBA. So obviously, I wanted to talk to you for a couple of minutes. This is good counter programming with the Mets on, and and Yankee fans maybe with a barbecue. But the bottom line is that I thought I would bring up first of all what is going on with the series we just saw with the Nets out of Brooklyn and, of course, the Milwaukee Bucks. And it's interesting to me that when I watching with Game 7, it did seem with a second to go that that could have been in real time. I mean, I thought right away that it was a three. It's interesting to note that Chris Carino, who does Nets games on WFAN, the play-by-play guy for the team, he knew right away it was really a two, and was guessing, if he was guessing or speculating that Durant had stepped on the line, he was right. In fact, one foot was over the line and the other one was on the line. Here's the thing. I understand that he wears a size 18, Kevin Durant wears a size 18 when he's playing basketball, which is one size bigger than what he normally wears when he's not playing basketball.
Well, it was, you know, it's a remarkable shot. I mean, even if you leave aside the foot being on the line, if you look at the 2 seconds prior to that, his defender, PJ Tucker, defends him perfectly. You know, he's right in his face without fouling. And then the shot that Durant hits is a turnaround from about 25 feet out. So when Durant turns around, okay, PJ Tucker is right on him with no distance. So Durant doesn't have a clear sight line to the basket. It's an extraordinarily difficult shot to hit, and it's tragic in a way that it's an inch away from ending the Bucks season, as Kevin Durant himself noted after the game. But look, basketball is, you know, a game of inches. And if you look at, you know, the last kind of shot like this, which was Kawhi Leonard's shot, you know, against the Philadelphia 76ers in game seven of that series, you know, that bounced three or four times before it went into the rim. And sometimes, you know, luck is on your side and sometimes luck isn't. And the poor Kevin Durant, that shot would have been enshrined, you know, as one of the best shots in the history of the game right there if it was a three-pointer.
Well, I found quotes from Durant And of course, right after the game ended, he saw, and I mean, there was no argument, no debating. He knew that he was with one foot on the line and the other foot over. And again, if he was wearing his normal size 17, the Nets would be taking on Atlanta in the Eastern Conference Finals. But he wears a size 18, and he has said, because I found some of the quotes from him, he says that it creates a featherweight feel to wear a size 18 on the court. He wears a size 17 off the court. But he says wearing a size 18 feels like wearing slippers. It has a featherweight feel for what he considers and has said for flexibility and efficiency. And listen, psychologically, I mean, you know, whether all of that has been, you know, determined, at least that's what he feels more comfortable wearing, a size 18, one size bigger than he normally wears. If he was wearing, and then I was reading also from some who figured this out, that if for him to have been behind the line with the same shot that you so eloquently described, he would have had to wear five sizes smaller than the size 18 that he was wearing. So it was very, very close. Let me ask you this. Do you, if you had been given a vote for MVP in the seven-game series with the Nets and Milwaukee, would you have given it or voted for Kevin Durant?
Yeah, probably. You know, I haven't really, it was very clear that Kevin Durant was the best player in the series. Now, with that being said, Giannis Antetokounmpo had a great series. He got a little overshadowed by Durant's, multiple 45-plus point outbursts. But Giannis Antetokounmpo, you know, averaged 30 points, something along those lines, 12 rebounds, 4 or 5 assists. And he was really, even his worst game in the series was probably game 2, where the Nets won by almost 40 points. But even in that game, Giannis shot 8 for 15 from the field. So overall, you know, yes, Durant was the best player, you know, in the series through 7 games, and he nearly single-handedly, you know, put the Nets into the Eastern Conference Finals, and his teammates had injuries, and Giannis, you know, the Bucks were mostly healthy. Mm-hmm. But Giannis Antetokounmpo had a great series, and like, the kind of series that if Durant doesn't, you know, erupt, the kind of series that we would say, you know, put Giannis on this pedestal right now. Because And there's a lot of criticism that rightfully goes to Antetokounmpo. He settles for too many jumpers. He shouldn't shoot as many threes. But if you actually look at the numbers, and it, you know, he didn't actually take that many ill-advised shots. He took some, but not that many. At the end of the day, he was a very efficient player. He hit a bunch of clutch jumpers, you know, played good defense throughout the series. So yes, Durant was the best player in the series, but Giannis Antetokounmpo was not too far behind.
Well, see, and here's the thing. I mean, this guy, the Greek freak, a two-time MVP, the guy really, let's be honest, unless he is bullying his way to the basket, and tell me, you have to tell me, that in a previous lifetime, he is going to be called for traveling almost every time. You cannot take one step from the top of the key just inside the arc and get to the basket with taking one step. Hey, I mean, I will, in the days of Mendy Rudolph, well before your time, one of the officials, a longtime Hall of Fame official, he would have been calling stabs. He would have been calling traveling on the Greek almost every charge, every bullying his way to the basket. I mean that, if that isn't traveling, but nonetheless, he is a two-time MVP, and I'll be honest with you, I saw enough of him watching all 7 games and just about every single possession of every one of the games. How does this guy, and I know because the numbers are there, the final numbers are there, over 30, and with the rebounds, the assisting. And here's the thing, in game 7, he hit 8 free throws. I didn't think I'd ever see that in my lifetime. And yet he hit 8 of 14 free throws, I believe was the final number. And that was incredible to me. But, you know, I saw enough of him. And, yes, he put up the points. And that's what it's all about. They won in seven games after being down 2-0 and being down, 49 points in game two, losing by 39. And they were humiliated and embarrassed, and everyone was beginning to think it's going to be a 4-game sweep for the Nets. And here they end up winning, you know, what is it, 4 of the last 5 games. So, but I could not believe that I was looking at a 2-time MVP who couldn't shoot. And, yes, what threes he did take, and he had a couple, I know, but even a blind pig, and then the free throws, you know, and the more than 10 seconds, I think they let that go in game number 7. I thought it was funny at the Barclays Center where the fans were counting, you know, the 10 seconds off for him to get that free throw. And and he hit on many that I thought he would not be hitting on. And also another thing between him and, of course, Durant. Durant had no help. I mean, Joe Harris wasn't there. We know about with the beard on one leg for the most part, although he improved in the 3 games that he was out there. He was better in game 7, but not 100%, and no Irving. And here, the Greek had Middleton, and then finally Holiday at the end of regulation in the fourth quarter. Holiday was 7-8 points, where he had been invincible for the first 3 quarters. So the Greek had help, and Durant, really, let's be honest here, did not have the help that the Greek had, that's for sure.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, there's not much of an argument against that, right? And there are different ways that manifests itself. For example, you know, Giannis, every single possession of the game does not have to be the primary offensive creator. Right? Because Drew Holiday can break down a defense. Chris Middleton, on top of being able to break down a defense, he's got an incredible, you know, he's a very, very good shooter. You know, Giannis, you know, there are stretches where he doesn't play well. Maybe say he's selling for jumpers or he, you know, he gets into too much hero ball. Well, when that happens, there are some other solid options that can kind of create their own offense. With the Nets, without Kyrie Irving on the floor and James Harden without having that burst to get around defenders and without having that lift in his legs, you know, you're relying on a supporting cast that cannot consistently create for themselves. Brett Brown had an amazing season, but he's relying on other players to create those little floaters for him in the paint. You know, Jeff Green can score, but he's not at the level of a Chris Middleton or Drew Holiday. Right. But really, outside of those guys, Landry Shamet is a shooter. You know, but he's not. He can't really put the ball onto the floor and get into the paint consistently. It was a huge strain on Kevin Durant. No, please go ahead.
Yes, and you mentioned the two guys, Shamet and of course Green, were the only bench players to get into Game 7, and neither one of them took a single shot.
Right. No, I mean you're absolutely right, and that's not necessarily uncommon for Game 7s. Coaches will shorten their rotations often. Yeah. But it goes to also show you, A, when you lose, you know, one of your best players and one of the other ones is like barely getting by, you're gonna have a shortened depth, and you gotta rely on Bruce Brown and Jeff Green. And one other guy I would say, by the way, that I didn't mention is Blake Griffin. Blake Griffin is another guy who unexpectedly gave pretty good performance in this series.
Oh yeah, he was excellent. Yes.
But you know, still he averaged something like 12-8 for the series. And look, 12-8 is very good for Blake Griffin, you know, as far as, you know, the role he was asked to play on this team.
Yes.
But that level of production when you are the fifth best player is great, but when you need to be the second or third best player, that's not going to be, you know, sufficient to win in a Game 7.
Okay, we are talking to Sopan Deb, a former WFAN intern who has gotten himself quite a career going for him, working the NBA beat with the New York Times. And let me ask you this. Where do the Nets go now? What happens? How can they improve? Because we know Sean Marks, really, in getting Harden to come to Brooklyn, gave up quite a bit. And where do the Nets go now to get better, to improve themselves and to find a rim protector, losing Irving and having, you know, a little bit hampered with a grade two strain with the hammy, having the beard less than 100%, and certainly losing Aldridge. That didn't help with the Nets' situation with the rim protector. How do they go about solving that problem since losing Jared Allen?
It's a great question. I will say the Nets have a couple advantages in terms of the free agent market. The first of which is that they have a championship core. I don't think anyone doubts that this series is very different with a healthy Irving and a healthy Harden. So what that means is they're going to have the top pick of, you know, anybody that's any veteran, any quality free agent sure. that is maybe looking to chase a championship. So, and Sharmark said that as much today at his press conference. But they also have a lot of free agents. Bruce Brown is a free agent. Jeff Green is a free agent. Blake yeah. Griffin is a free agent. You know, look, is it realistic for them to bring back everybody? Spencer Dinwiddie is another guy. And he's yeah. someone who, by the way, you know, he kind of got lost because he got injured three games into the regular season.
Yeah.
But Spencer Dinwiddie is a 20-point-a-night scorer. If the Nets had him in this series is different as well. So that's four core free agents. And, you know, my guess is, and again, I'm not, you know, in the room with Sean Marks when he's going to make these decisions, right, but my right. guess is the Nets try to make a play for all of them to come back. You know, Brown, Green, and Griffin all played some of the best basketball they have in years, you know, playing for the Nets. And so they seem to enjoy being here. And, you know, so here's what it comes down to. The Nets have a championship core in place already, and that's a big benefit. And they're going to have a lot of free agent options to who want to chase a championship ring. So I think the Nets are in good shape heading into the offseason. The
yes.
only problem is every year you don't win a championship, the more scrutiny gets placed on the franchise because of the amount of draft picks and the young players you gave up to mortgage the future for this one kind of window to win a championship.
And I believe, the Nets can sign someone with that mid-level exception for like $6 million. And I'm sure, as you allude to, they might be able to attract the kind of player they need with the $6 million, taking even a pay cut to join what will probably be, of course, you know, a championship contending team next year, even though some of the guys are, all of the guys are going to be 1 year older. The one thing they have to worry about is injury. And that is with Durant, that is with Irving, and that's, of course, with Harden or anyone else. But I do understand they could probably sign somebody for the $6 million mid-level exemption, and I'm sure there would be a number of players worth more than that that might want to come to Brooklyn and play for that money and to be a part of a championship team.
And absolutely. And also, Steve, I would add that they also have something that a lot of teams don't have, which is an owner willing to spend the money.
Yeah,
you have an owner that's willing to pay the luxury tax. You so when you have a championship core, an owner willing to spend the money to keep that core together, yeah, the Nets are in a good position to come back even stronger next season, I think.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Sure. Under these circumstances, and also, I mean, they have an odd year, even year kind of situation with getting some of Houston's draft choices. Am I correct there?
Well, they have an option. So they have the option to either swap picks, but the Nets don't have really a lot of picks for the next 4 or 5 years.
Well, that's right. I think we're talking 2027, 2028.
Yeah, I don't have the exact year in front of me where the draft picks stop going to Houston and or the draft swap stop going to Houston.
Right.
But it's going to be really tough for the Nets unless they trade for a pick. Which, you know, you never know what can happen in the NBA given how wild the offseason
sure.
are. It's really going to be really hard for the Nets to build through the draft. But they knew that. That's what happens when you trade for stars. Okay.
Yes.
The gamble is that you're going to be able to sign veteran free agents. But the other decision to face in the Nets, Steve, I'll tell you, is that all the big three, Irving, Harden, and Durant, can leave after next season.
Yes.
So the other thing hanging over the Nets is, okay, you mortgage the future. Are you 100% positive that this trio wants to stay together after this year? And a lot of that hinges on what happens next year. But you have the potential of giving up all these young players, giving up all these draft picks, and then in a year from now, not having any of the players that you traded for or signed.
Yes.
And so that's going to be also something you need to watch out for, whether the all-star trio signs extensions.
Yes, and I think they are all happy. I mean, I know Durant's comments was we have to work and get better in the offseason and gear for next year. Maybe the Nets win a championship next year if Durant wears a size 17 instead of a size 18. And I'm in real time, I have to tell you, I thought that was a 3. And then, of course, then we saw what was the situation after the review, as we say. Where do the Knicks go? The New York Knickerbockers, where do they go to find their point guard?
The Knicks are in an interesting spot because they have kind of everything you want if you're a kind of up-and-coming franchise. You have a good system and coach, a good system in place, a respected coach. You have young talent, you know, and they have cap space. You know, they have draft picks. You know, they have kind of everything you want if you are a without having stars, right? They have the peak, they have the, you know, the assets to chase stars if they want it. You know, it's the question is for the Knicks. The problem is that this free agent crop this summer is kind of not great. It's not, there's no real A-listers right now on the market. Maybe Kawhi Leonard, but although, you know, we don't know what the situation with his knee is. But there aren't a lot of, you know, Kyle Lowry is on the market, you know, so maybe the Knicks, you know, go get Kyle Lowry. But Kyle Lowry is kind of is you know, on the you know, other side of 30. Mm-hmm. You know, do you want to spend a bunch of cap space on that? So the Knicks are in this position where they have a bunch of space, but who do you spend it on? Right. With that being said, you know, R.J. Barrett's there, and you know he has shown the ability to run the offense pretty well. Emmanuel Quickly has as well. So it's an interesting question, but I would say the Knicks have the kind of problems a lot of franchises want, which is they have the cap flexibility, they have a good system in place, they are still in New York City. In theory, like now maybe they're attracted to free agents. What I would suggest is that if a top-level star becomes available, like a Bradley Beal or a Damian Lillard, the Knicks have the assets to make themselves players for them.
So yes, and they're now, a relevant team, and now able, you would think, to get at least to be choosing, I mean, a star player who will upgrade the team. And if it's not a point guard, certainly maybe another shooter they could use to complement Julius Randle, who's not a number one guy. I think we saw that. But the bottom line is they'll have some choices. And it would be how novel for the Knickerbockers to be in a situation where they may have it easier to get some improvement, to get some players who want to come to the team because they are now on the NBA map and they are now a relevant team.
You're right. And, you know, there are a couple of interesting names out there that I think could be targets for the Knicks, like DeMar DeRozan of the Spurs, who's had a couple great years in San Antonio, and he's a very, very good scorer. He could complement Randle, I think. Now, again, does that get you anywhere close to a championship level? It probably, maybe, you know, it might get you to the Eastern Conference Finals.
How about Lowry?
Lowry, yeah. Listen, Lowry's a great player, you know, but he's also, I think, in his mid-30s now. And, you know, and I think obviously Kyle Lowry is still one of the most productive point guards, you know, in the whole league. You know, and obviously he hasn't won a championship, you know, great clutch player, all that stuff. It's just a question of, you know, do you give someone who's in the mid-30s a max deal, you know, and at this point. But again, remember, the Knicks, as you know, Steve, you know, in the 2000s and, you know, early 2010s, you know, became famous for giving long-term contracts out to the wrong people, right?
I'll tell you this, as long as they don't go after Ben Simmons, how awful was his performance against Atlanta?
It was not. It's not the performance you want from your all-star point guard in a game 7. I will say I did feel like some of the vitriol directed at him felt a little, you know. Look, you never lose because of one player. You know, I will say as far as game 7 goes, Ben Simmons was not good by any stretch.
Right.
He was, you know, offensively at points a liability. But I will also say he defensively, and I don't know how much of that game you caught, but defensively he did a lot of good things. He made Trae Young's life very difficult in the fourth quarter. He had 13 assists. You know, it's not like he was the only reason they lost. Joel Embiid last night had 8 turnovers. If Ben Simmons was that big of a liability, it's also on Doc Rivers, I think, to also say, hey, maybe I should bench this guy. You know, maybe I should not play him in the fourth quarter when I need some shooters out there.
Yeah.
And so I don't think this loss is wholly on Ben Simmons. I mean, the Sixers bench didn't do much either. And look, at the end of the day, Simmons' play is partially what got you the number one seed. So it's hard to say, hey, you know, you are one of the reasons we got here, and you are one of the, you know, we've ridden with you so far. And then kind of throw him under the bus now because of a bad series. And
so, well, you know how the media is in Philadelphia, and you also know with the fans there, I don't think he could survive enough confidence and being timid and being hesitant is part of his lack of confidence. I mean, you saw the dunk that he could have had and didn't take it, tried to pass it off, and then after the foul, the only one free throw. And again, I mean, that would have tied the game had he just gone up and dunked the ball, as we saw, but he didn't do that. And that is something that is going to stick with Philadelphia fans and Philadelphia media. And you know they don't take any prisoners. I think they're going to have to trade him.
Well, I mean, certainly that's going to be on the table. I will say Ben Simmons is under contract until through 24-25. And in 4 seasons from now, he's on the books for about $40 million. So, you know, you have to get back a decent amount of trade value, but you also have to find a team that is willing to invest into Ben Simmons. And right now, I don't know what team that is. You know, if Portland is willing to trade a CJ McCollum for him, you know, maybe that could work. But is Portland willing to do that? In some ways, Ben Simmons kind of had this bad series at a horrible time because he's locked in for a long time for Philadelphia.
Yeah.
So Philadelphia might have to make this work. They might have to just rebuild Simmons' confidence and rebuild it in house.
And not a good finish for Doc Rivers. Sovan, I have to. We have to leave because of time and so forth. Before I let you go, and I can't thank you enough again, and glad to hear that things are going good with the New York Times, the whole thing. But give me your 2 teams in the finals and who wins.
I will go Bucks over Suns, and I think the Bucks win.
Okay. Listen, thanks so much for your time. Best of luck to you. And maybe one of these days we'll have a chance to run into each other again and talk about those days when you were picking up some of the telephone calls and being a part of the program. And thanks so much for giving us all this time on Monday night.
Fair enough. Thank you so much. It was a pleasure to be on. Be well, Steve.
Yeah, you bet. And that is Sopan Deb, covers the NBA for the New York Times.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.